welcome.
Everyone's
I said welcome.
Hello.
Yeah, welcome everybody to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Rosemary Guiley, and she's coming at us live from an undisclosed location. Her websites are visionaryliving.com, ginuniverse.com, that's not spelt with a G, it's spelt with a D-J-I, and two N's, of course. And she is the author of a number of books, including The Gin Connection, The Vegetable Gin. My father was actually a bit of a bad drinker when he drank gin. That might have been part of the context of the book. The Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, The Encyclopedia of Angels. Now, I find it interesting when you talk about gin and we're talking about spirits at the same time. I don't know. Maybe there's a connection there. In fact, Rosemary is one of the leading experts on the paranormal, with more than 50 books published on a wide range of paranormal, spiritual, and mystical topics, including 9 single-volume encyclopedias. Rosemary has worked full-time in the paranormal since 1983, and her present work focuses on interdimensional entity contact experiences of all kinds, including investigating claims of dimensional portals and geographic locations of intense paranormal activity. She's done some groundbreaking research on shadow people and the djinn. Now, speaking of which, could we get a little bit of a background on what the djinn actually is for those who are completely clueless?
Well, Vinny, we know them as the genie in the bottle. That's the primary way that they migrated into our folklore and popular culture. These entities who supposedly could be trapped in bottles and vessels and would come out as smoke, and they would have to grant wishes to people. And they were always treated in kind of a goofy way in the media, you know, kind of quirky, tricky things that most people just chalked up to fairy tales and fantasy tales. But the djinn, their namesake, the namesake of the genies, they're quite real. And in fact, genie is a corruption of the word djinn, which means the hidden ones. They are a race of supernatural beings who, like other races of beings that we have in our lore, like the fairies, preceded us on the planet. They were here first, and they had dominion over the place. But they lost out to us, and like many of the fairies who also lost out to us, some of them hold a grudge about it, and they get back at us by attacking us in supernatural ways. They can haunt us, possess us, cause all kinds of problems. They're very well known around the world, and one of my purposes in writing about them now is to acquaint a Western audience with them, and also paranormal and investigators and UFO investigators, mysterious creature investigators, that these beings are participating in a lot of our paranormal experiences and abduction experiences, and we just don't realize it.
Now, is there kind of like some kind of a sort of like, it sounds like key scraping on the line there, sort of in the background. Any explanation for that?
Usually I have a very good Skype connection, but I have found that when I talk about the djinn, there is often some interference on the line. There's this high-pitched...
Sounds like jingle bells.
There can be high-pitched whistling, clicking, staticky sounds. Sometimes calls will get dropped, and this can rise and fall. Now, this didn't start, as you know, until we started actually talking about the djinn.
Mm. Indeed. Well, and what I want to find out from you in particular is not only what the djinn are, but in some cases there's a lot of identification with this mentality or the appearances of these entities that people equate with other things, like psychopaths, alien abductions, men in black, so on and so forth. Could you explain, is there a line to be drawn here between so-called reptilians, so-called aliens, so-called demons, etc., and the djinn, or are they all the same kettle of fish?
There are researchers around the world, and I've consulted with many people who have been following and researching the jinn, who say, look, the jinn account for everything except us and the angels. They shapeshift into myriads of forms, and all these other beings, they're really just shapeshifted jinn. I haven't been able to go that far in my own research yet, but I do believe the jinn, as masterful shapeshifters, often appear as other kinds of entities to distract us so that we don't really know exactly what we're dealing with. In the years that I have been researching them and following their threads, the evidence, and all kinds of experiences, I have found their tracks in paranormal hauntings, especially the really negative ones, in possession cases, bad luck cases, alien abductions, ancient aliens, demonic cases, fairy cases, their presence in our supernatural engagements goes very, very deep.
Now this background sound is actually getting really intense. It's even actually starting to hurt my head a little bit. AFR producer, would you be able to get Rosemary on the landline phone number that I've posted in for you there? That would be really nice. Hopefully it'll solve a few of those problems. And seeing as we're not doing webcam, we don't need you on the Skype anyway. So when he responds, we'll be able to do that for you. The unfortunate business is when you're trying to produce live on air is that you don't know what's causing these problems. You don't know how to solve them. Sometimes they just solve themselves, like before you finish speaking. But other times it's just, you know, you've got to just have some backup plans. And that's what we do. Ah, that's blessed. Rosemary's screaming line is gone. And just let me know in here when she's back on the phone line. That would be nice. Over the weekend, good news, ladies and gentlemen. Me and my friend Mikhail from the Paki Hachis, we call ourselves, we finished our first music album. Yay! So that's nice. And I'll eventually be putting that up on the website so people can download the songs for free. And if you like them, you can make a donation of like $20 if you want to download the whole album, I guess, you know, or less, whatever. Do we have Rosemary back on the line by chance? No? Okay. That's unfortunate. I'm just going to sit here and ramble for a moment. In terms of the so-called djinn, wait a second. He's saying yes. Rosemary, are you there?
I am here, Vinny.
Whew! Okay. This is what I wanted to get. And you sound clear as a bell with none of the jingle bells in the background.
Well, I'll hope it lasts.
It was actually really hurting my head. Like, there's certain frequencies and also certain tones of voice can actually start to really, like, give me a migraine headache, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's like, have you ever talked to a completely far-gone New Agey person who's fully adopted the Luciferian ideals and the Agenda 21 protocols and is really anti-human and stuff like that? And they talk in this kind of really scary sort of I'm going to kidnap you and all of your children type of voice? That gives me a migraine. Seriously. All right. Well, anyway, back onto the gym. We're talking about shapeshifters. Are these the same things that people are calling archons?
I do believe that the jinn have intermingled with archons. Now, whether or not they account for what we call archons, if they account for all of them, it's very difficult to know where the boundaries are. And the jinn may account for a lot of our experiences with other kinds of entities. When I was tracking their presence through the paranormal and supernatural worlds, I looked at a wide range of entities and examined them characteristic by characteristic, myth by myth, the folklore, to see, are we talking about the same thing or just similar beings, or, you know, how easy would it be for the jinn to masquerade? And in the jinn connection, I do talk about the archons, that they have a similar personality. They have a similar method of dealing with human beings, which is a hostile way of dealing with us. It's manipulative. It's for their own gain. And that there are power issues behind a lot of that. We can find similarities to the reptilians, Nephilim, the Anunnaki.
What does an entity that can shapeshift and basically do whatever they want?
They are quite powerful that way. And even in their ancient lore, they were renowned for their shape-shifting abilities. It was usually said that there would be some little flaw in a shape that would give them away, but sometimes it wouldn't be very noticeable, something that they wouldn't be able to get quite right. But I believe that many of our experiences with mysterious creatures are jinn, because they really delight in taking weird shapes that unsettle or even scare human beings. And many of our mysterious creatures are like that, you know, the half humanoid, half animal shapes, or shapes that are animals that should not be. They're combinations of weird characteristics.
David Rockefeller comes to mind.
Sorry?
David Rockefeller comes to mind.
I'm sure all of us can think of more than a few people that could fall under that category.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a very strong presence in the abducting ET scenario. And here again, I don't believe that the evidence at this point supports sweeping statements like they account for everything. But I do believe that they are very heavily embedded in these experiences, and they take on these other guises, mainly so that we don't know what we are really dealing with. And that enables them to pursue a whole range of agendas without us really knowing what's going on.
Well, it strikes me as kind of like in an army, you have many different units. You know, you have artillery units, you have front ground troop units, you have medical detachments and things of that nature. So you've got all this variation, but they're all part of one big army kind of thing. So maybe they're one of the many shock troops, I don't know, of the agents of darkness, which all kind of do similar things to humanity.
We have a tendency to look at other entities in cookie-cutter fashion. It's like the grays, you know. They all look the same, they all do the same thing, and we sort of apply that template onto a lot of other entities, when in fact, they are just as varied as human beings. They have different personalities, weaknesses and strengths, motives. They do different jobs. And so the jinn could be sprinkled throughout our experiences in varying capacities in just that way. Some of them just want to have fun with us at our own expense. Some of them actually become enamored with us, even infatuated. Some of them are downright hostile. And then just like human beings, the jinn have their thugs, bullies, criminals, and even terrorists. So we're dealing with quite a wide variety of types of jinn, as well as different motives, any number of which may come into play in any given situation.
In the ancient texts and things like that, where are the first references to the word jinn?
They originated in, or rather what we know about them, comes from ancient Arabian lore. This is pre-Islamic lore, where they were beings that were said to be composed of the wind and also to live underground. They were usually blamed for the bad things that happened. They were, from the beginning, considered to be tricky, difficult to deal with, beings that you best left alone. You didn't want to incur their wrath or have any traffic with them because they could get the upper hand on you. They were absorbed into Islam. Now, in pre-Islamic lore, there are stories about them losing their dominance on the planet, that they ruled the earth but got to be too arrogant, and human beings came along and they lost their advantage. In Islamic lore, it's couched within the creation of human beings, that before human beings there are angels and jinn, and the jinn have access to the heavenly realms where the angels are. When God decides to create human beings, he tells the angels to bow down before Adam, and the angels who follow God's will comply. But the jinn, who have free will, do not, on the grounds that human beings are inferior to them. And so for that, they are cast out of the realm. And in modern terms, this would be retreating to another dimension, In olden times, it was removing yourself to a remote area, wasteland, or going underground. You know, similarly, the fairies went underground and into remote areas. And ever since then, there have been among the djinn those who want to take the place back, the place that they feel is rightfully theirs.
Mm. So, yeah, it's a game of two halves. Some of the djinn are just like, you know what, let's just live peacefully in harmony, and some others are just like, let's take this puppy back. It was once ours. It's our right. We're better than humans anyway.
There are djinn who don't have any ill will against human beings, but it is said almost universally that these beings really don't want to have much interaction with us. That you know, they're in their world, we're in ours. They're not inclined to help us or do anything benevolent for us. And it's the other faction, the hostile faction.
Rosemary, we're coming to a break. We'll talk about the hostile djinn faction when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen.
Rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually, will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to collapse above. Right and left are symmetrical on the puppet master's tentacles. The two sides are identical. The troops are not ejectable. They're forming a prodigy and making the Jordan come out of me. It's like recording Nostradamus, taking a tour in the prophecy. The real American.
Welcome back.
The poor live in poverty with the corporate dictator.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can listen live on the homepage there. And for those of you who are wanting to listen to archives of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, they are all available at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And if you give us a donation or a subscription, or you just want commercial-free archives, you know, just ask, and I'll send you the links, you know. And if you're savvy, you can find them on the homepage there. Anyway, I had somebody criticize me and saying, you know, how come you're giving people who pay money ad-free archives and not the rest of us? Firstly, if I was just giving it to the rest of you, what would be the point in paying? And secondly, I do anyway. and the reason why people donate me money is because I do what very few other people can: give a platform to really interesting perspectives from people all over the world on all spectrums of discourse. You know, if that's a crime, I'm sorry, but I'm freaking guilty. And my very special guest is Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And we're talking about the djinn. And before we got onto the break, we were talking about the slightly benevolent, in fact, rather than benevolent, just sort of like benign half of the spectrum there. And you were just about to start explaining the malevolent side of the spectrum.
Well, that's right. That the ones that we're interacting with are a very skewed portion of the djinn population, because not all djinn are hostile to us, but the ones we're interacting with the most are, and they have been able to cause us significant problems over the centuries. And I do believe that they have a major presence in the ET abduction scenario, which is probably one of their latest fronts of activity. And they insinuate themselves in among the other entities who we're dealing with. I do not rule out that we have engagements with a variety of entities who have varying motives. But the djinn are very good at looking for opportunities. They are fundamentally opportunists who look for the best way to accomplish their objectives. And since they are masterful shapeshifters, by sliding around and hiding in other kinds of entity encounter experiences, so much for the better for them. We don't really know that they're there.
So they're very mysterious and difficult to track down. And this is something that I was talking about a couple of years ago when I first started hearing about these alleged reptilian entities. And I was like, well, there's so many people who are like special forces and so on and so forth that have come into the truth movement since then who believe in that kind of thing. So why don't they just try and capture one? You know, if you believe in it that much, why don't you track one down and capture it, put it on display for the world to see? How difficult would it be to capture an entity like a djinn, though, who's basically made of smoke and can shapeshift into anything it wants?
It's probably more difficult than we might think. Now, I've been told by a number of sources that I've consulted over the years that there are efforts to capture these entities and that there are government interests that are very involved in this. I have no firsthand knowledge of that myself. These are the kind of conspiracy theories that do circulate around, and there may be some merit there to some of them. To me, personally, it would be surprising if we didn't have an interest in trying to track one down, especially if they have these kinds of motives and these kinds of abilities. In magic, the djinn can be summoned and contained. In fact, if you read the Middle Eastern press, there are accounts almost every day of sorcerers who say they are capturing the djinn into vessels in order to exorcise them from people and places. Every week I get emails from people who want to know whether they should buy objects that are supposed to house djinn. And they seem to think that these djinn are going to be their personal servants. I don't think it works out that way if you get the genuine article to begin with. But I believe that they make themselves visible to us when they choose, not when we choose, and that they have the upper hand most of the time when they choose to interact with someone in a very involved way. They do seem to be disturbed by certain kinds of electrical and EMF energies, and sometimes people find that things like simple things like turning lights on or leaving televisions on at night, computers and that sort of thing, will repel or dampen the activity. But like a lot of things out there that are predatory, they can build up resistance to those tactics as well.
So if you're going to protect yourself from one of these entities, I mean, how would you know that one of them's even onto you? What are people's experiences like?
They happen in a variety of ways, and in fact, sometimes it's hard to distinguish djinn from entities that we call demons, who also are very predatory and oppress people and become involved in possession cases. But with the djinn, there are some patterns of behavior that are likely to tip their hand. One is that the pestering of people is in a multitude of ways. People are distracted on a variety of fronts. There's this apparition and that form. There are different kinds of apparitional forms around. There are black shadows. There are nightmares. There's wasting away of health and bad luck and things of that sort. It seems like there's a lot of activity going on in many different forms, and people often think that there are entities responsible for each one of those, when in fact it might be just a single being, a single djinn. They are very self-directed. They have self-centered interests. It's like what's in it for them. They're not serving any spiritual purpose of trying to do us in on a soul level. I think some of them will, but unlike the demons of Christian lore, they operate on their own. They have free will, and so they're looking for opportunities that are going to further their own interests.
As the French would say, they have a certain je ne sais quoi.
Well, absolutely, and It can take the form of religious and spiritual battles. Sometimes that is the battleground, but in those cases, they're often, in our culture, masquerading as something demonic. Sometimes they respond to religious exorcisms, and every faith has techniques for dealing with unwanted spirit presences, and they all work. But with the jinn, they don't, not all of them work all the time in every case. I think that they are some of the hardest beings to get rid of. And every time I interview people about their experiences and I talk to other experts on the jinn, they all say the same thing. Avoid these beings because, once you're dealing with them, they are extremely difficult to get rid of.
Are they the kind of dangerous things? I saw this film not too long ago. A recent film came out with this. This kid can see ghosts and demonic entities. He can see things before they happen. And there's this one type of demon that crawls around all over the place. And if they ever notice that you're watching them, if they ever notice that you're aware of them, they come after you big time, and you're pretty much dead.
Well, some of them do. That's exactly how they respond. You know, there's different levels of awareness in the spirit world, too, and with other entities. And, yes, some of them who are the higher level beings, you know, the ones that are more intelligent, more interested in manipulating or having some sort of invasive interaction with us, once they see that you notice them, you're on their radar, and that can be very problematic for some people. You don't ever get off that radar.
Have there any stories that you've seen of people actually vanquishing one of these entities, banishing them?
I have. I've been involved in what I call persistent negative hauntings here in America, and these are cases that I follow them for a long period of time, and the longest one I followed it ran about 3 years. And we've had situations where we've tried a variety of remedies. Now, I'm not an exorcist, but I will work with people who do those kinds of procedures and consult on that and recommend things. We've tried a variety of things, and the entity seems to go away for a while, and then it's back. I've had other cases where remedies have worked seemingly for the long haul. And again, it's finding something that this entity seems to respond to. So sometimes the remedies are very simple. And for example, in the jinn connection, I have a case from the Midwest where a young man had an attached jinn. And this was one of these amorous connections where the jinn who become infatuated like that with human beings, they attach themselves to people if they can, and then they start interfering in that person's other relationships because they want the person all to themselves. And he finally was able to get some relief by using a very ancient remedy, the Seal of Solomon, which is an amulet based on the magical lore of King Solomon and his ability to command all the spirits in the spirit world. And he used this amulet like a shield at night because he was being pestered a lot at night. And that worked the trick. He had tried other things. He'd tried willpower, keeping the lights on, keeping the television on. There are lots of kinds of folk remedies that are supposed to diminish their ability to manifest and to have power. And nothing would work for very long, but this seems to have had a long-term remedy. Now, I do hasten to add that what we might consider long-term, even a half a lifetime or a lifetime, may still not mean that the entity has gone away, because they don't live on timescales like human beings, and an entire human life is nothing from their perspective. So if they're interested in an area, some of them have...
Well, hold on. How do you know that? I mean, have people communed with the jinn and obtained sort of like ancient knowledge from them or something like that? Are they very old? What?
This is old folklore about them, yes. And, you know, some of the original sources are lost in legend. They get passed on down through the years. And there are people who have had communications with the jinn and get information. By and large, when they're interested in having interaction with people that they don't want the human beings to know very much of what's going on, they don't communicate very much. And if they do, it's to convey their displeasure with people. Yes, we have a variety of sources on the communication. So they are said to live for very long lifespans that in human equivalent be into the thousands of years. So if they go away for a few decades in by the human count, it really doesn't necessarily mean that they've gone away for good. But we have to look at it from our perspective in terms of do we have relief from a troubling situation? And if it lasts for a long time or even indefinitely for us, then we consider that to be a permanent solution.
Mm. In terms of communication with the with these entities, has anybody actually tried to make contact, and what happened?
Oh, a lot of people try to make contact, and an astounding number of people want to make contact for the purpose of conjuring them to make a deal, to ask for favors, because they think these beings are some sort of, you know, sources of goodies out there that are going to do them endless favors, and that's not the case. The jinn do anything for people, there's always an exchange. They will ask for something in return. And in a Faustian kind of way, it's usually not very good for the people in the long run. Other people have been curious about communications. In the cases that I've followed over the years, the negative hauntings, I have always attempted communication through a variety of ways. We've done seances, mediumship, real-time EVP, passive EVP, and sometimes they will communicate. It's usually pretty terse and often very hostile. It consists of messages like, I was here first, I don't like you, go away, or I'm going to make you miserable until you do, things of that sort. Now, there are people who have had...
Rosemary, sorry, we're coming into a break again. Okay. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Rosemary Allen Guiley.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know.
Whose side are you on?
Are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's our final segment for the first hour here. And my very special guest is Rosemary Allen Guiley. And I would like to ask as well... Does the jinn, like, in general, is there some kind of, like, anti-human agenda? Because it seems like they're real nasty pieces of work, a lot of them. And what occurs to me then is that birds of a feather flock together, so that there must be a whole lot of really nasty human elements within the world that want to work with them, like in a black ops military or anything like that. Is that a just a crazy assumption of mine or what?
It's not crazy at all, Vinny. I think this sort of activity goes on all fronts, and actually it's been going on since human beings started having communities and conflict. We have always sought supernatural aid for our causes, and we've invoked the help of gods and spirits to vanquish the enemy, to further our cause. And, of course, these are subjective judgments because one person's enemy is another person's friend. Entities have always been petitioned in that way. And it goes on today. We shouldn't be surprised about that at all. So the jinn are asked to do favors for people, to strike out against enemies. We had reports in the news media about 2.5 years ago from a sorcerer in Iran who said that he had jinn that he sent out on intelligence operations. I've had interviews with U.S. soldiers who've come back from the Middle East, like Afghanistan, and they'd never heard of the jinn until they got there and had strange experiences they couldn't explain, and learned that the jinn were being used against them as supernatural warriors.
Could you elaborate on those stories from U.S. soldiers gone to the Middle East and witnessed strange experiences?
Well, they often see the jinn, like we do in haunting cases, as black shadowy forms that shapeshift in different ways. They look like silhouettes of human beings. And a very common variation of that is the bedroom visitor, who looks like a man wearing a coat and a hat. But they would be often seen at night. They would hear the lore about them, about how they should never be crossed because you will suffer for it. Some of them have come home with the signs of jinn attachment. They've had certain kinds of nightmares. They see these black shadows in their homes. They have health issues and bad luck. Some of it's being diagnosed as part of post-traumatic stress, but it could also be symptomatic of jinn encounters. I have one case where a soldier who was very badly wounded was approached by this entity who he, you know, had no idea what it was, but the entity offered to save him in exchange for a favor, and then it wanted favors in return. And this entity has since followed him home. So we tend to reject these things as superstitious nonsense in our culture, but these sorts of things are very real. They have been since ancient times, and they go on today. We should not be surprised that terrorists, that our political opponents in certain parts of the world could be looking to supernatural agents like the jinn to increase our problems.
Well, because they believe in black magic and dark entities and things of that nature, and in fact try to cultivate them. I mean, there's some ritualistic sort of satanic practices where they're actually really trying to open up children, usually within occult families, to demon possession, so that they can become one of the family for real.
Well, we have plenty of those kinds of interests in the modern Western culture, too. But, you know, the stories that have surfaced in the news media, they just tend to be ignored and dismissed. I mean, even in 2002, we had the interview, and I cited in the Jinn Connection, with the sheikh who commented on the murder of the journalist Daniel Pearl. And he said in this rhetoric to America that we ought to be more worried about the jinn than human terrorists, because they were capable of doing us a great deal more harm. Now, you know, we have people today who invoke spiritual assistance. They pray to religious figures, to the angels. They people will ask for all kinds of things, help, healing, miracles, often good things for themselves. But it's not unusual for people to pray against their enemies and to want spiritual assistance in striking their enemies. That's praying against. And, of course, this is all subjective, because if you feel you're in the right, you don't feel you're doing anything evil. It's the bad guy you're trying to get rid of, and that's really a subjective call. So we do these sorts of things all the time, every day. And sometimes it's we're very deliberate in looking for spiritual assistance for manipulation to wreak havoc, and other times we're calling upon it in the interest of helping ourselves. But in helping ourselves, it may be at someone else's expense.
Does that mean, in general, that these entities only usually try to, approach people who already have a belief in some kind of spiritual dimension? And they leave atheists and so on and so forth alone because they just don't believe in them. They're like, yeah, what's the point?
Entities who are opportunists are going to look for the path of least resistance, the easiest targets. And so it stands to reason. I think this has been the case throughout history, that people who want power, they're greedy, they want to create a lot of havoc, they make easier targets because they can be manipulated for personal and selfish gain. And I've had some of my sources from the Middle East tell me that these sorts of things are business as usual in many parts of the world, summoning entities to further your political ambitions, for example, or your quest to build a huge fortune. Human beings make themselves vulnerable all the time in those ways.
Hmm. So let's say somebody prays to Satan or something of that nature. Would a djinn just go, you know what, I could pretend to be Satan for a moment just as long as I can manipulate this douchebag?
I do believe that those sorts of masquerades happen, and here again, we often think we're dealing with something else. And if it suits their purpose to be, for example, a Christian demon and behave in certain ways, then that's what they're going to do. In the djinn connection, I talk about some of the work of Michael Hollowell, who's an English paranormal researcher and had quite a bit of experience with negative cases. And he told me about one case he had where it was a djinn who was acting like a demon and putting on a great show for the religious exorcisms, and then it would just go and hide somewhere and come back. It wasn't affected at all by that. The problem is that we don't really know where the boundaries of these situations are, what the playing field is, literally what the playing field is. We can't just automatically assume that all things are going to be negative, and that all entities are going to be negative, and they could all be the djinn, because then we wind up shutting ourselves off from the good side of the spirit world and the high-level spiritual energy that really powers our spiritual growth and expands our consciousness. So it seems that we really need some education and discernment. We need to be better educated about the spirit world. I don't think that most people in the West have a very good idea of what exactly is out there. It's people tend to think in black and white. It's either an angel, so it's good, or it's a demon, so it's bad. And actually, our encounters happen in a playing field that's very much in the middle, and it's very gray and murky.
Well, it sounds to me like if they've got the ability to shapeshift, as you say, that they could masquerade as pretty much anything. Their desire is what? To amuse themselves?
Well, here again, we find multiple purposes at work.
Be a cancer on humanity's spirit? What?
For example, we have the out-and-out, what we would call the terrorists, the one that wants the one to wreak as much havoc as possible, and with the idea of gaining dominance over human beings. And then we have the ones that are just out for a lark. They're amusing themselves. Then there are some that are in between. They're more self-serving about getting something from human beings. They may not care about a grand plan, so to speak. So we have a lot of things at work, and it's as varied as human beings interacting with each other. We are a planet of many conflicts, many harmonies, and as we see every day in the news, clashes of purposes, objectives, and desires.
Mm. Well, you know, I would like to know, maybe in the next segment here, we're going to be coming to break soon, whether or not there's sorts of wide-ranging remedies, maybe even supplements or things that you could take, like a gin tonic, as it were. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is my guest. Don't you go anywhere, folks. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, Monday through Friday in the United States, 5 till 7 Central, that's 6 till 8 Eastern, 3 till 5 Pacific, and in New Zealand it is Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. till midday, until we have daylight savings, then it's like 11 a.m. till 1, and then we have daylight savings again in the United States, and it becomes like midday till 2 p.m. Over the summertime. So, yeah, it's pretty confusing if you're in New Zealand. But if you're in the States, nothing ever changes. Kind of like the ruthless amount of criminal scumbaggery that is running the country and keeps getting freaking elected by all the stupid idiots who think that their votes actually matter when they're probably just, you know, for lack of a better term, demonic representations of humanity, in my considered opinion. Not to say that they're all demons and everything, but if they were, they'd certainly be acting pretty similarly. Okay, and my very special guest is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and we are talking about their gin. And speaking of which, her websites are visionaryliving.com and ginuniverse.com. Now, the topic I wanted to get into starting off the second hour is a gin and tonic. Is there some kind of a tonic that you can take to prevent yourself from becoming possessed or attacked or stalked by the gin?
There are lots of remedies, but not all of them work for everyone in all situations. And so I polled a lot of experts and a lot of experiencers and experimented with a lot of things myself in the cases I've investigated myself to see what seems to work the best. And there are a number of fronts that can be approached. One is a host of remedies that really deal with a lot of the supernatural phenomenon, just getting the energy, breaking up the energy that makes it difficult for them to manifest in our dimension. They have to come into our dimension from another realm, and we don't really understand or even know all of the conditions that exist for that to happen. There are certain places around the planet where that seems to be easier than others. But breaking up that energy can make it much harder for them to actually be present here. So old remedies, things like iron. The iron weakens many spirits, including negative spirits. It's been a time-honored remedy against fairies as well. But placing iron around the outside of a home or in a room, if you're having a lot of bedroom visitations, it can be very helpful. The use of the Seal of Solomon as a personal amulet has worked for some. People have talked quite a bit about prayer, and once again, there are no uniformities. People will swear by things like the Lord's Prayer. For other people, it does not work a bit for them. For people in the middle, it works for a while, then doesn't work. So prayer can be effective. All these things can be effective, but they may not last. The use of willpower, that is what we call righteous anger and willpower. And this is seems to be the most effective for people who are having repeated attacks and contacts. Not everyone is plagued consistently for long periods of time. They may only have a few interactions. This seems to be the most effective, that at some point the chronic victim needs to find some sort of internal power, which is a combination of your own directed and focused will, your connection to whatever your spiritual center is, the strength that you feel you draw on from the realm of the divine, and combining that to create some sort of force field that prevents the entities from having attachments or close contact. And this has been discussed quite a bit in the abduction literature, and abductees have gone through the same sorts of things, like how do I stop these, and they try many things and don't work. And the ones who get the best relief find this inner power. People who are engaged in some sort of spiritual practice, a sense of a connection to the spiritual realms, a practice of prayer and meditation. It's sort of like going to the spiritual gym. You increase the buffer around you.
About animals? The Egyptians believed that cats were like the guardians of the underworld, and if you want to be protected from dark entities, you'd have a cat near you.
Well, in jinn lore, it said that the jinn do not like wolves, but I have not encountered much in modern practices where images or some sort of wolf totems are used, as a prophylactic against them. In fact, I think that they account for some of these shape-shifted forms of dogmen and wolfmen that are out there. So there are certain prayers in a variety of religions that are said to be effective. Folklore from the Middle Eastern world is full of remedies, spiritualized water, spiritualized foods, things that we find in our folklore here about ways to keep negative things out. But fundamentally, the bottom line is, I believe, finding something within yourself. Ann Druffel, a well-known ufologist, and others have called it sovereignty. I think that's a good term for it. The sovereignty of the individual not to be violated in certain ways. And here again is very new territory for most human beings. And so we have a very poor idea of what the rules of engagement are, if there are any.
Well, if that's the case, then surely we haven't solved or even fully understood this phenomenon yet. And one's got to ask, is there an end game to all of this, either on the human side or on the jinn side or whatever?
The big end game would be the faction that really wants to have domination in this realm again, in our physical reality. And there are researchers who feel that that is a very significant threat. How long a time frame is going to play out is anybody's guess, because here again we're dealing with entities that are not operating on earthier timescales. People have criticized the whole abduction scenario, the ET abduction scenario, by saying, well, if these entities are so smart, why do they keep abducting people? It just seems to be the same thing over and over again, so this sounds like mass hysteria or mass fantasy. But if you look at it from a different timescape, then things make more sense in terms of why over perhaps an entire human lifetime the same sort of thing might be taking place in terms of interactions with the entities. So that would be the big agenda. But then there are lots of smaller agendas. You would say, well, it's the neighborhood thug, just trying to, further his own gains. And there are plenty of people, human beings, who have those motives too. They're not participating in any global scheme of any sort. They're just trying to look out for themselves. So none of this really bodes well for human beings. That if we have more incursions of even just the low-level tricksters, it threatens to have a very long-term deteriorating effect on people. These sorts of things can wear down people's willpower, their resolve, their health, their ability to be productive, and their ability to pursue their spiritual growth as well. So even at the low end of things, we should...
You know, what was very funny when you were just listing all those characteristics that they're trying to hold back? I was like, well, it sounds exactly like the government.
Well, there are many people who would be willing to consider that these entities are in league with certain conspiracy elements, certain oppressive government elements, and it can't be ruled out. I do not know what the extent of that might be. I think that we have just scratched the surface on what's going on. And in the two books that I've done on the djinn, this is just like taking the first lid off things. My feeling is that things go much, much deeper. And in fact, even when I started out in my research, I did not expect things to spread in so many directions. And it's like something having infiltrated every possible thing you can think of.
And how deep do you theorize that it might be going? I mean, hypothetically.
They may very well be able to manipulate us in ways that we're not even aware. One of the things that I get into in the djinn connection is reevaluating our old myths and stories about our engagements with ancient aliens and visiting beings. We have stories about supernaturally empowered beings, visitors from the sky. They come and teach people things. They seed civilization. And these beings seem to have a purpose for doing that. Some of them, it's a very self-serving purpose, like the Anunnaki, genetically manipulating people so that they become better workers and slaves. The Watchers, who cohabit with human beings and create the Nephilim, who spread corruption on the land. The Archons, who are these like false gods who want to use humanity for their own ends. We have these stories over and over again in our mythologies, and a lot of them show what I call the footprints of the djinn. You could see the hand of the djinn in there. Whether or not the djinn account for 100% of all of them, I don't think we can go there yet, but the djinn could very well have had a hand in human affairs from the very beginning.
So they could be one of the progenitors of our very species.
They have, according to ancient lore, intermingled genetically with human beings. They are capable of having children with human beings, having hybrid children. And even in the days of King Solomon, these sorts of hybrids were feared because they would have the powers of the djinn and the characteristics and traits of the human being, so they could insinuate themselves in human society, but yet they could be very dangerous, like loose cannons. We have the abducting ETs who are said to be creating hybrids with us. We have reptoid entities that are half human and half reptilian. We have fairies who create hybrids with people. It's deeply embedded in our supernatural lore for human beings to be mixing genetics with all kinds of things.
Well, it's kind of like I found that part of the human experience attempting to break into other dimensions, like in the spirit of exploration,
as it were. They're always trying to do new things, go places we've never been able to get to before, and this massive quantity of curiosity and creativity that is inherent in being human, I think, is really the thing that really kind of facilitates this and makes almost anything possible. And within the realms of almost certitude, that there's really a hell of a lot going on within the human race that most humans are simply not aware of, because our ability to create things and our collective curiosity has been, in my opinion, deliberately dampened in no small part by mainstream media, so that if anybody ever experiences anything fully creative or fully outside of the realms of alleged normality, it's simply written off now as crazy and not listened to at all.
You know, we have so much potential. And yes, I think more than ever we're being channeled and manipulated. And I think we're running the risk of becoming very dulled that way. Some of these scenarios that you can extrapolate from just the small amount of evidence we have for these kinds of interactions, they become very scary. You have to start entertaining ideas like, does the Matrix, a la, you know, the films, does that kind of reality really exist? Is everything just some sort of artificially manipulated reality to keep us complacent so that we perform some other kind of function for some parasitic or, you know, dominating entity or presence?
Well, if it doesn't literally exist, it certainly figuratively exists. There's umpteen million methods of distraction to keep people slaves and just keep putting their energy into powering the system that dominates them.
Well, all the advances in energy that we have, which are so wonderful on one hand, they do encourage us to think less, to be less creative, because something else will do it for us. And I'm very alarmed by the increasingly shortened attention spans that human beings have, because we're incapable of focusing on anything for more than a few seconds at a time.
Have you noticed that? You know, some people's eyes just glaze over within only a few seconds. Like, that's as far as they can hold their attention for.
The visual media that it's in our diet, so to speak, on television and in films, it's geared toward rapid movement, rapid change. Going to a film, for example, with any sort of sustained dialogue in it is a rarity these days. And we have generations now of young people who have their faces in their cell phones all the time. They can't do anything without consulting their cell phone every few seconds.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. Whole lot of friends together at a table. They're only looking at their cell phones. We'll be right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest today is Rosemary Ellen Guiley from visionaryliving.com and ginuniverse.com. The bridge between the physical and the metaphysical, or the paranormal and the normal, rather, seems to be, I don't know, in recent times for me at least, Rosemary, to be closing up a little bit. Like, it's becoming an inescapable reality for me that there are elements within the world that are not only outside my control, but actually outside my understanding. And as I become more aware of people's, you know, research and things of that nature, by like yourself, for example, what occurs to me is you really got to have some kind of faith in yourself or faith in humanity to sort of keep you through all this, because it seems like we're under attack from all sides, and in any war, whether that be spiritual or not, one thing that's really important for the war effort is keeping your morale high.
I was wondering, how do you keep your morale high, knowing these things that you know?
Well, I'll tell you, Vinny, it does the whole dark side of things does become pretty alarming. But I have always believed, and I still believe, in the forces of good having that will prevail in the long run. And I believe that this is the way the cosmic scheme of things is ordered, that it is the force of wholeness, harmony, completion, and a glue, so to speak, of unconditional love that binds creation together in what we can possibly conceive. If there's something beyond that, you know, who knows what that is. But we have to be aware that we are in a situation of opposites, too, that we have good and so we have bad. We have light and dark, and we have polar opposites. And these are in constant tension for dominance. And, you know, they will swing back and forth. I think ultimately the good has to prevail over things. But getting there can be quite a rough ride. And we've had, just in terms of our human society, you know, periods of long dark ages where it seemed that we lost all of our connection to the forces of good and to not only our ability to see them, but any sort of collective striving toward that. So we don't want that to happen now. And the thing is that we were just talking about with this technology issue is that if you were an invasive force and you couldn't just march in and annihilate people, or I think they would have done that already if they could come through in significant numbers and stay long enough and have the right artillery at their disposal, so to speak, they would have already done that. So there are some sort of forces at play that we may not even be aware of that limit that, but they're obviously looking for advantage. And so you would gain that advantage, first of all, by hiding, by masquerading and covering yourself in some way. You would do it by distracting people on a variety of fronts, you know, the old divide and conquer sort of tactic. And you would weaken them in some way through health, through finances, through constant conflict and chaos, many ways that human beings could literally be worn down on a spiritual level, which would make humanity much easier than to manipulate as a whole. And something like that is going on right now, and we're not aware of it because we are distracted. We're engaged in you know, our worldly affairs. We either don't believe in this stuff, or we're trying to keep our heads above water, or we have literally been broken down by this super technology that has fragmented our attention to the point where we can't focus on anything.
Yeah. Hey, another piece of super technology. Do you know how aliens repair their damaged spacecraft?
I'm sorry, about aliens and spacecraft?
How do aliens repair their damaged spacecraft?
Oh, I don't know.
With a duct tape.
Oh, that's very clever.
I just thought I'd slip that one in there, you know? It's also how they keep their victims quiet when they're abducting them. Preventing motion and so forth. And see, this is my methodology of dealing with the darkness and everything like that, because it's not only just you telling me this. I've had, like, people over the last couple of weeks just coming at me from left, right, and frickin' center coming on the show and talking about all these copious quantities of eclectic scumbaggery that seem to be, you know, inexorably surrounding the entirety of humanity in a vice-like grip of perpetual darkness. And, you know, my defense mechanism for this, and it's been working so far, I don't know how much longer it's going to last, is just comedy, you know, having a few laughs. I don't know how effective that is. Or I don't know, has anybody ever tried laughing at the djinn and make them feel bad about themselves by making fun of them, and they go home and cry to their celestial mommy or something?
Well, I don't know if they can make them feel bad, but what I hear on all fronts and what I've experienced myself is that as soon as you are afraid, they've got the upper hand in a very big way. They manipulate fear. And, of course, sometimes when they appear in very hideous forms or in these dark shadow people forms that scare people in the middle of the night, your first instinctive reaction is one of fear. And they can throw off a lot of very hostile energy. So not being afraid is very important in dealing with them. And, of course, comedy, if you can laugh at something, well, that can help you shore up your defenses, too. It just makes your armor a little more like a little more impervious. You know, you got better spiritual titanium around you, so to speak.
Mm.
One of the things that I
comedy,
think is happening, we're already in this,
sorry,
is we are moving toward an interdimensional Earth where these openings are going to be more frequent, more sustained, and we're going to have to come to terms with the fact that we share the planet with other entities who also are here on Earth but live in other dimensions, not to mention beings who manage to find their way here from exoplanetary space as well. And it's a mixture of the good, the bad, and the ugly. What we may be seeing is a skewed perspective now with more manipulative forces, but there are good ones as well. But it seems to revolve around the fact that human beings are... We're not aware of our own sovereignty and our own, I guess I want to say, specialness. You know, you were alluding to that a little earlier, Vinny, about our creativity and, you know, all the good things about human beings that makes us very attractive, either as allies or as targets. And we don't seem to have much of a communal sense of self about who we are and our rightful place in the scheme of things.
Well, I hope that we can actually change that mentality, because I don't know about you, Rosemary, but I've been talking to a lot of people all the time, and so many of them have just kind of lost their faith in humanity. They think that we're a cancer on this earth, that there's nothing good about us, that we should be punished, that the more people that die in war, the better, you know, that kind of thing. And what occurs to me is, you're just completely out of touch with reality, mate. You're only absorbing one half of it that the darkness in this world actually wants you to see and wants you to believe about humanity and about yourself, so that you will never even bring or even try to bring the light out to shun away the darkness.
Well, that in turn is a likely kind of campaign tactic against us as well, just to... make us feel more hopeless, because, you know, the idea that humanity has just gone down the gutter and we might as well just give up. And we can't go that route either. So we really have to, I think, be better fortified and better educated in order to avoid these hazards and to prevent them from getting too much momentum. I am an eternal optimist, and I've never really been one to give myself over to conspiracy theories and the doom and gloom, but those things are out there. We do have to be realistic, and maintaining the right attitude toward it, the right equilibrium, is going to be increasingly important if we are going to survive and thrive.
Mm. Can you say honestly that humanity is on the right track now? Like we're actually starting to overturn this? Because as far as I'm concerned, that is the case, is that we've been living under a dark, predatory, horrific, paranormal system for quite some time now. And with the aid of the internet and the information spreading, expanding people's minds left and center, expansion of consciousness, a lot more research and scientific evidence is coming out now that is actually really encouraging for our ability to fight back against darkness, whether that be normal or paranormal. And I think that we're on the up and up, whilst at the same time, the bad ones are trying to convince us that we're on the down and down.
Things do seem to be very, very polarized, and there's an awful lot of chaos going on right now. Many people, I think, just really searching for direction. We've had so much political and economic upheaval around the planet that these are serious forces that disrupt lives on all fronts and just make survival difficult. And that's another way for the darker side of things to gain a manipulative handhold, is to, you know, break the backs of people financially, break them emotionally, break their health, keep their domiciles in chaos. But every time human beings have reached the bottom of something, we've always managed to get our act together and to rise back up above it. So, like I said, I am the eternal optimist about these sorts of things. And
can I ask,
yes,
what's your source of eternal optimism? Is it a natural thing that's always there, or do you cling to it because you fear the alternative?
A lot of it has to do with the people that I'm in touch with all the time. And, you know, I'm out in the community a lot. I'm on the media, in the media a lot. I'm addressing audiences. I'm having personal interactions with them in cases and via the emails. And I hear from the other side of the fence, too. It's not just people who are having problems, but it's people who are tracking very solidly on the spiritual side of things, who've had uplifting experiences, who've had transformations in their lives, who are dedicated to bringing a higher frequency of spiritual light into their lives and into this world. So I hear about that side, too. The dark side, of course, gets a lot of attention. It makes for the best media. And one of the reasons why I've gone into this area is because I see a need for education here, that if you turn away from it because you don't want to think about it, or you just hope it will go away if you don't think about it, those sorts of things are not very constructive for us either. So it's about bringing things into balance, and my work has always straddled both sides of the fence, the light and the dark, and I see a lot of very powerful forces moving in on the other side too, the side of the benevolent and the good, and the constant striving for the better picture.
Who or what awakened you personally to this kind of thing? I mean, did it happen during childhood or what?
I suppose it did, Vinny. Like a lot of people who become involved in this in a deep way and also on a full-time basis like me, we've had experiences since childhood. Now, I didn't have any really experience that I would consider to be extraordinary in any way, like, a big blowout kind of experience. In fact, I think in many respects, gradual sorts of awakening are often better. They certainly help you integrate things a lot better. But I did have experiences when I was a kid. I had mostly angel and fairy experiences. I have no recollection of ever having been abducted. I became aware of past lives when I was a teenager. I started experimenting in out-of-body travel and the dream state and lucid dreaming and in precognitive dreaming when I was pretty young, too. And those were some of the things that launched my interest in this area. I've always been fascinated by this. And the fact that this is not an equal playing field for people, that some people have these experiences and other realities that they know are genuine, and that's what happened to me. And then other people explain them away or dismiss them or claim that they don't happen at all, that it's not real, that they're just some sort of hallucinatory thing. So I wanted to look at the how and why behind these experiences all of my life.
Okay, well, let's. I wanted to get into this a little bit more after the break as well, because I think upbringing and really kind of determines what you turn into as an adult. We'll be right back after the break with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. I would really love people to be listening live. That's 5 till 7 Central, 3 till 5 Pacific, 6 till 8 Eastern. If you happen to be in the Uber Kingdom, it'll be 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. late at night when all the conspiracy theorists are still awake watching scary documentaries and giving yourself frickin' nightmares. And in New Zealand, speaking of a frickin' nightmare, 10 a.m. till midday is the time to listen in. That's Tuesday through Saturday because we're broadcasting live from the future. And my very special guest is Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And I would like to ask you just a sort of a... I'm not sure how you're going to answer this, and nobody ever would, but is there anything that you kind of self-censor? Things that you choose not to talk about because you think people might quite not get it, or you're afraid of being judged angrily by people for it?
There's really nothing on my list like that. I don't even have a list like that. I've been very open over the years about my research and also my willingness to change my opinions about things. You know, as any researcher, as you get into finding more evidence and uncovering new leads and things like that, well, some of your old ideas about explanations for things have to go by the wayside. And some researchers are not real willing to do that. I think we have to be willing to do that. So I've always talked about the evolution of my own research. My work is really oriented around the how and why of our experiences, and I'm not real concerned about trying to prove the paranormal to anyone. For me, it's existed my whole life. I've taken that as a fundamental truth of reality. And so the audience that I address consists of people like that who've had experiences. They're looking for explanations. They want to understand how these things fit in. They may even be interested in wanting to explore other kinds of experiences. And I always tell people, you know, look first for natural explanations. And then if you can't find any that reasonably fit, then, you know, we consider the supernatural and the paranormal. So over the years, my own boggle point has gotten pushed further and further out. And the things that I've taken on board, you know, years ago, I probably could not have imagined going into all of this with the djinn and hidden agendas and things like that. It was a natural growth of my research. I came across evidence that I simply had to check out, leads I had to follow, and I had to integrate the findings that I came across. So, I leave it to people to make their own conclusions about things. I have found over the years that there are many people who resonate with these areas, and I think that a lot of very serious inquiring people, a lot of very balanced, people that you would say, you know, these are not fringes that we're dealing with. These are mainstream people who've had extraordinary experiences, and they're looking for information and for perspective.
How do you maintain your perspective on all of this? Because I've got the philosophy that if you travel to hell, hell comes back with you to a large degree. And if you've got your head buried in this paranormal realm with vengeful djinn and so on and so forth, has it ever really worn you down at some point?
I've never felt worn down. I've always felt that I've had a great deal of spiritual help and protection around me, and that I am doing what I agreed to do or plan to do in this lifetime. I believe in reincarnation, and that we set out a blueprint before we come into a life, and that this lifetime, the inquiries that I'm pursuing as a writer and researcher, are follow-ups on other lifetimes where I've had similar activities as well. So all of these things have helped me to maintain my own equilibrium and perspective. For most of my life, I have had my own spiritual practice. I consider myself to be a deeply spiritual being, not necessarily religious. I have yet to find a religion that satisfies all of my spiritual needs, but I appreciate religions at the same time. And I've followed spiritual practices of meditation and prayer and a study of esoteric philosophy, religious philosophy, trying to find the plumb line toward, higher purpose. And I think that all of us are called to that in our own way, whether we find that through our families, through our jobs, or some sort of overarching spiritual pursuit. That's really the calling that goes out to each and every one of us.
Can I ask as well, who's one of your biggest influences, or rather, who's given you the biggest platform to speak about those? Have you been on any mainstream media things like NBC, CNBC, or whatever?
In terms of media platform, probably shows like Coast to Coast AM. I've been on Coast to Coast AM for quite a few years now, and that has a very sizable audience. I find that for this kind of work, radio is a much better medium than television because you can get into things more in depth. And I've appeared in lots of documentaries over the years. I like information-based shows rather than, a lot of the reality shows. But radio is a very good medium for getting a lot of information across. And the audiences who like radio are very responsive, and I get feedback. And the feedback I get is very important to me because I listen to what people are saying and what they want to know and what their experiences are, and that helps me direct my own research as well. In terms of researchers, it depends on what front you're looking at, from the metaphysical and into the paranormal. But certainly in regard to these topics that we've been talking about tonight, Vinny, like the djinn and the manipulative entities and things like that, the work of John Keel has been very important to me. He was a friend of mine as well while he was alive, and John was very much ahead of his time with a lot of his ideas about what's out there and what is manipulating or shaping our experiences. He did tend to have a pessimistic view toward the end. He said that, this was all a cosmic trickster and there wasn't anything we could do about it. It was something that was playing with us at our own expense. But he talked about portholes and windows into parallel dimensions and beings from the planet coming through these dimensions, things that, 30, 40 years ago were not in discussion much in terms of what was happening. So I've always considered him to be one of the true pioneers in the field.
And in terms of being... Well, who you are, I presume you're pretty happy about that, and your place in the world right now. And in terms of your methodologies for just, you know, keeping on an even keel and going through things as you do and keeping your positive attitude, what advice would you give to people who are maybe struggling right now to deal with these realities that you've already seemed to have dealt with?
Daily practices of meditation are very important because it really is like working out the spiritual gym. There's something about and praying is important too, but meditating gets us into different levels of consciousness that seems to strengthen the buffer around us, the aura of our vital life force benefits from that, and to be well-read spiritually, philosophically, and even in the paranormal literature. I think it's very important to have these spiritual underpinnings. Whatever religion you want to follow or whatever esoteric philosophy you want to follow, it's important to have that because it's a foundation that you need to come back to over and over again to keep your bearings and get your bearings when you've been thrown for a loop. I have.
Have you ever been thrown for a loop, have you?
I think everyone goes through dark nights of the soul that happen in different ways. And I've had times in my life where I felt like I was losing my bearings, that I was being deserted by, you know, my spiritual allies. I had to find my way by myself. Most of these were just navigating the ups and downs of daily life. It's not so much a movie kind of confrontation with evil where it's, you know, the green slime running down the walls, so to speak. But dealing with the darker entities has been problematic from time to time. And you have problems. I haven't had, real serious problems like a lot of my cases. But they do manage to disrupt things from time to time. So, I'm like just every other person out there and going through highs and lows and often struggling to find the line of truth. And that's really what we're all searching for. We are all searching for that truth with a capital T that explains to us who we are and what our journey is in this life and as a soul.
All right. Rosemary, Ellen, Guiley, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Her websites are visionaryliving.com and ginuniverse.com. Make a donation at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.